It's 8 minutes past 8 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell. I'm here this week filling in for Joy Cardine. It is 8 o'clock on a Friday, and that means it is time for the Week in Review. As always, lately anyway, lots and lots of big stories to talk about. We've got new job numbers out on the national and on the state scene to talk about. We've also got Super Tuesday to talk about, mining legislation in Wisconsin, and the list goes on. A couple of folks in the studio with us today to help make sense of it all. Ed Garvey joins us. He is a senior partner at the law firm of Garvey, McNeil & Associates, and the publisher of www.fightingbob.com. Good morning, Ed Garvey.
Good morning.
Good to have you along.
Well, it's nice to be here.
David Blaska is with us, too. He is a former Dane County supervisor. He's got a brand new blog called Bring It, and you can find that on the In Business Wisconsin website. And Dave Blaska, good morning to you.
It's a beautiful day in Wisconsin, Gene.
You know, at least where we're sitting, it is a pretty beautiful day in Wisconsin. I hope it's beautiful everywhere else, too. Let's take a look at, and let's kick things off with job numbers. Some new job numbers out on the national scene this morning. The economy, it says, according to the story I read, added over 200,000 jobs in February, the third month in a row that sort of thing has happened. Economists see this as good news, but not great news. Let's start with David Blaska on this. How do you see it?
Well, it's the economy is something I remember from back when Bill Clinton was president. I had a lot of conservative friends tell me that how could people vote for or support Bill Clinton? I said, have you seen this S&P 500, have you seen the unemployment numbers? They're great. And that's how people, that's how important that stuff is. So these numbers and how people feel about them is critically important. And I was saying, even a few months ago, it's a long time until November. And it really is going to depend on what the job prospects look like in roughly July, August, and September, where people kind of form their opinions on in respect to the coming election.
Ed Garvey.
Well, there's always too much emphasis placed on what the president can do for the economy or what the governor can do for a state economy. But taking that into account, Obama has to be very happy with the numbers as they continue to show more hiring in the private sector. And so I'm sure that he's quite pleased with that. Whereas in the state of Wisconsin, we continue to have a very mixed report. So it'll be interesting. I agree with David in the sense that the perception of whether we're on the right track or wrong track will probably determine who's going to be elected president. But fortunately, those candidates who are running for the presidency in the GOP are giving us other ammunition, so we don't have to worry just about the number of jobs.
Here in Wisconsin, the job numbers came out yesterday, and I read the release from DWD, the Republicans, the Democrats, and then there's a whole host of other ones, too. And it was all interesting because every single release I read had a different number attached to it.
Right.
It sort of talks a bit about the complexity of it. But, Ed Garvey, your reaction to those numbers and that complexity, because on the one hand, everybody, it seems, tries to make it simple, but it doesn't seem very simple, at least when you start looking at it at the whole picture.
Well, it's never simple because you have unemployment figures, you have employment figures, you have the number of people who have left the workforce during that period of time, who's counting the jobs. So I would think that when you look at the number one promise that Governor Walker made, 250,000 new jobs as governor, he now, by my count, is behind the eight ball. He's going to have to raise 259,000 jobs this coming year, or the 3 years, just to be even. He's not going to be able to do that, of course. And so the question is, will people hold him accountable? I think they will.
David Blaska.
Well, it's sort of like, Tiger Woods saying, I want to win the golf Grand Slam, which means he's got to win the four majors. And if he wins three out of the four, he could say he's a failure, I suppose. But, I think that's the right goal to have is to grow jobs. Under Jim Doyle, the state lost 250,000 jobs. So certainly that was the right message and the right time. I guess, 15,700 new jobs in the private sector in January, I think, is something to crow about. You're right about, there's a number, I guess, for everyone. Unemployment is the lowest, 6.9%, the lowest since 2008. So we're on the right track, but I think, a lot of if you're a small business owner, medium-sized business owner in Illinois, and you want to move to Wisconsin or expand, I think right now you're waiting to see who's going to be governor in 6 months. Is it going to be Scott Walker or Michael Moore?
Or Michael Moore? Yeah. I'll go with Michael.
Okay.
Well, we'll see if he's on the ballot. 800-642-1234, by the way, if you'd like to join in. David Blaskin, Ed Garvey are with us this morning. We're talking about the Week in Review. I want to spend just a few more seconds on these numbers. People talk about the unemployment rate. They talk about jobs added. They talk about this. They talk about that. David Blaska, when you're looking at the numbers, which number matters to you?
Well, you know, I used to do this when I did work for workforce development under Tommy Thompson. He was always very interested in these numbers, and we had just come out of a recession at that time. I think private sector employment is a key. You know, I've been saying for years, and even I think this is bipartisan. Jim Doyle was saying it, that and Tom Barrett in Milwaukee, government is not a growth industry. So the private sector jobs.
All right. Ed Garvey.
Well, I think it's the question of the trends. I mean, for example, one of the stories I saw said that Walker had a good month, a bad year. And I think that's right. What's happened in Wisconsin is that he has continued to lose private sector jobs. In January, February, it looks like things are getting a little bit better. So you look and see what the trends are going to be. I don't see – well, when you read all the articles about the mines, for example, they say, oh, gee, this is terrible because we're going to lose 700 jobs that might have come here had the mine been approved. Well, 700 jobs is a drop in the bucket when you're talking about 250,000 jobs. So it hardly qualifies as a major factor. But they can't get off of it because it's a good argument for them. Everything they, no matter what they want to deny, they'll say, think about jobs.
And you mentioned mining, so let's turn to that. The Senate voted this week 17-16 to turn down the proposed mining legislation. I had a guest on earlier this week who says the mining legislation is dead. But I was in the Capitol yesterday, and there are some folks in some offices who are saying, well, maybe not so much. Ed Garvey, where do you see this going?
Well, I think the hint is that they're trying to change the state from the badger state to the possum state. I think that when they say that they are going to pull out, it's a threat that is meaningless because Gogobic certainly wants to be here in the state of Wisconsin, and just about everybody on the Republican side is in favor of that. Fortunately, Dale Schultz was held firm and voted against the rapid passage of a bill that would have really eliminated the regulations that we need to protect our environment. But it's going to continue to come back, I think, until either it's passed or killed. One of the things that always amazes me is that they never talk about, you know, if these minerals are so important, or the iron ore is so important, the taconite is so important and so expensive, why don't we get a percentage of the money that we get that they get for that? I mean, if they're going to sell a ton at X dollars, why shouldn't 50% of that go to the state of Wisconsin? Instead of that, they talk about a little tax, little money that's going to go to the local community. What happens if this whole thing really goes to pot? In the environmental sense.
Well, Ed, I'd like to see, you know, if you get a nice little settlement from the jury, that you share that with me, too, as well.
Okay.
I'll do that.
I like you.
Socialism starts here, as far as I'm concerned, right here.
Doesn't end here, though.
Okay. Well, that's, I hope not. But, you know, that's the problem with socialism. I mean, you must, you know, share the misery equally. You know, it's only 700 jobs. I don't know. I tend to look, Gene, a little askance at, you know, the multiplier effect. But I think with mining, you definitely have that. You know, you've got 9% unemployment up in Iron County. I think a good full 2 points or more above the state average. You've got the average wage is something like $35,000 a year. Compared to roughly 52,000 a year statewide. So, you know, it's an economically depressed area. And there's something that grates on me a little bit, that all these wonderful, good environmental friends that we have here in southern Wisconsin, where it's relatively prosperous still, they want to preserve the north as their own private playground, not realizing that, first of all, it's a big place. You know, are we going to despoil the North Woods? If you take, I think, north of Highway 10, it's something like you could fit the states of Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island there. They're going to remediate all of this hole that they dig. It's going to be a lake when they're done with it. It's iron mining, doesn't require any of these awful chemicals. You know, they crushed rock. They use magnets to get the iron out. I mean, that's how almost a light touch on the environment. So if we can't do mining, and the Duluth News Tribune, which covers the Mesabi Iron Range in Minnesota, said we've been doing this for 100 years. What's the problem?
And so do you think it's dead?
No, I don't. I think, you know, to be honest about it, I think that Jojebic Taconite did a little bit of drama queen, a little bit saying we're out of here. However, you know, if Wisconsin's not hospitable, if it can't pass legislation, because the bill we've got, the law we've got right now since 1974, no iron mine has been situated in Wisconsin. No mine of any kind has been situated because it allows for open-ended, never-ending legal disputes, not even before a circuit judge, but, you know, an administrative law judge. So, you know, you name the environmental organization, very easy to have a lawyer like Ed go before them and say and hold it up and hold it up and hold it up, because some people don't believe that they believe that mine should be outlawed in Iron County.
Ed Garvey, you wanted to jump in.
Well, David talked about this being the playground. Indeed, it is. I mean, this is the tourist industry is where we really make our bread and butter in the state of Wisconsin. When they're talking about a 21-mile-long hole that's going to be 4 miles wide and deep enough to hold as much water as we now have in Lake Winnebago, you're not talking about some little tiny project over here on the side that might have an impact. It could have a tremendous impact, all negative. So I think that when people look at the environmental protections, the company gave itself away by, first of all, they drafted the legislation. Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce drafted it with them. They wouldn't admit on the floor of the legislature who drafted the bill, who sponsored the bill. All this was they tried to do it in the still of night or the darkness of night. When it finally turned out that the company itself had drafted the legislation, you have to be pretty suspicious of what those regulations are going to be when it comes to protecting the environment.
Well, they're out there for everyone to see, though, Ed. I mean, it's not like the legislation's a secret. It's, you know, it's all out there. And I mean,
now it's out there.
You're mentioning Lake Winnebago. I think you can walk across that, and you probably wade up to your waist. It's a shallow lake. That's all I'm trying to say.
On the other side.
I would have a month ago.
Let me ask you this: we've got a couple of calls on the mining issue we're going to get to in just a second. But as soon as that vote came, moments later, a lot of finger pointing started. You know, Senator Fitzgerald said it got screwed up. People charging the Democrats didn't really want to compromise, and on and on and on and on. In your estimation, let's start with Dave Blaska on this. What happened with this legislation, and why did it fail?
Well, I had heard earlier on that Tim Carpenter might be might defect from the Democrat side because he represents a district in the city of Milwaukee that has a lot of workers from Bucyrus Erie, which is now, I guess, Caterpillar. There's another mining company. I forget its name. It's interesting. Wisconsin, there's also a large mining tool or implement company in Green Bay. Wisconsin seems to have a in Wisconsin, you know, we have the badger, we have the miner on our state seal and state flag. I took that off, by the way, and put up an AFSCME union activist on the state seal. So we've replaced the miner in his pick and shovel. But what happened with Tim Carpenter, I don't know, except, you know, once I'd like to see, you know, they talk about working with the other side, and Dale Schultz is just praised to the skies for breaking ranks and working with the Democrats. How about one Democrat not being so partisan and working with the Republicans? How about that for a challenge?
How about the challenge being that you look at the substance of the legislation rather than who's doing it one way or the other, whether it's Dale Schultz or whether it's Tim Carpenter? I mean, the fact is that if you look at what the issues are, what Dale Schultz said is that there has to really be a serious compromise where you still have the contested case proceedings. There's no basic time limit on the DNR to get things passed because you're supposed to be looking out for the best interests of the state of Wisconsin. If we had the public intervener back, as we did when they had the Crandon mine episode, we'd be a lot better off.
I know you want to get to the callers here, but that's the other thing Dale Schultz did there. He actually sat down with Bob Jauch, who was, you know, maybe facing his own trouble up north there with angry people missing this economic opportunity, saying he praising Kathleen Falk, who was a candidate for governor, and the last public convener we had, along with Peter Peschek. Tommy Thompson abolished that a good 20 years ago. Jim Doyle had both houses of legislature in his party, and he couldn't bring and wouldn't bring back the public intervener, a former attorney general under whom the public intervener served. So that tells you something, Ed, doesn't it?
Yeah, it tells me that Jim Doyle should have exerted some leadership on that, as he should have on campaign finance reform and a number of other issues. I was deputy attorney general when we had the public intervener, and it was one of the most effective branches of government. It wasn't exactly a branch of government. It worked in the attorney general's office, but it was very helpful in a whole number of issues, and it would be here.
All right, let's go to calls right now, and Lenny is with us from Madison. Good morning.
Good morning. The one thing that I noticed about that legislation streamlining those mining permits was the way the Republicans, you know, this guy's talking about Democrats not going along with it and Senator Schultz not going along with it. Well, when you don't give the public much input, and once the permits are issued, that's it. That's the whole process. That's the ball game. And anybody that says that an open pit mine up in the Pinoki Range in that region up there wouldn't affect the environment, in particularly the flowage of the Bad River, they don't know what they're talking about.
Lenny, thanks for the call. Let's start with Ed Garvey. Where was the public in this?
Well, he's right on target. I like this caller. When you take a look at the state of Wisconsin, we have worked hard, Democrats and Republicans, the old Republicans, the Warren Knowles-type Republicans, to make sure that Wisconsin would always be environmentally friendly. We've been leaders in the nation in terms of protecting our groundwater and our air and our surface water. And what is being said here, for example, is that the tribes were not even consulted or involved in this process. So even if it had passed in the legislature, I'm not sure it could ever become law because they have just disregarded the role of the tribes, who would be deeply impacted by this decision if it were to be built.
Dave Blaska.
Well, I think, we have a democratically elected legislature, and, would there be an economic impact? Sure, of course. There is for every human activity. I mean, we're on radio here. It's somewhere there's a puff of smoke somewhere making electricity so that we can go on the air. We don't want to get into the windmills just yet, but maybe even there's a windmill bothering some neighbor here making the electricity. So I think human beings have, we need iron. I mean, I drove a car here today. A little bit of pollution, I suppose, as little as possible. I had some iron in the car. So, we use these materials. So there's a little disruption. But for every acre that they impact, they have to have an acre and a half that they'd remediate. There's some pretty strict regulations.
How much money, David, do you think would be made by the mining company if this goes forward?
I hope a lot.
How much? Just, you got any idea?
It's
an asset of ours, right? It's the people of Wisconsin.
Right.
That iron ore is our asset.
Yes, it is.
Well, how much are we selling that for? Or are we just giving it to them? We say, if you'll create 700 jobs, we'll give you, what, $5 billion or $10 billion? Or what is the figure?
Well, you want half of the... That's like saying here, let's do the same thing with beer then when we sell beer. You would. That's a problem. I don't want to encourage you. Because all the water we're exporting.
Well, let's move on to another caller right now. Greg joins us in Madison. Hi, Greg.
Hi. I just wanted to, I guess, make a comment about one of your guests' comments earlier about Jim Doyle losing 250,000 jobs. And I guess my comment was, over that period of time that he lost those jobs, pretty much every governor in the union lost jobs due to the recession in the economy. And so the other comment I wanted to make is that our current governor in the early last summer was quick to point out the job gains that he wanted to apparently take responsibility for, but now that he's lost jobs over the last 6 months, he's quick to point the finger somewhere else. And to me, that seems to be ideological claptrap. And I'll take your comment off the air.
Let's start with David Blaska.
Well, he has a point, and I think I also agree with Ed. Politicians tend to take too much credit for jobs created. On the other hand, though, we have to create an environment where jobs can be created. And that, to me, includes mining. With unlimited legal challenges, and you have billions of dollars, or at least hundreds of millions of dollars in capital that you require for a large manufacturing and mining enterprise, you're not going to let that hold and go. You're going to simply go to another state where business is welcomed. So we should point out that Governor Walker does not have a net loss of jobs. He has a net gain of jobs. And his 4-year term, and I'm more and more confident that he'll see a 4-year term. We'll render our judgment then. But I think he's taking the right steps. The business community, which Ed is in love with, they seem to think that the governor is on the right track.
Well, how do we know that? I mean, because
they say.
Oh, they say it.
And they say that.
I mean, one of the things that Dale Schultz said that I think bears repeating is he said you don't get do-overs when it comes to the environment. So if they're wrong about the impact of the mine, they can't just sort of say, well, let's start over and forget that. I mean, this is a major project, and one of the questions that just stays with me is, what happens if the company goes broke? What happens if they file bankruptcy? What if they disappear? What happens to the waste, and who takes care of it, and who's stuck with the liability? I don't have any sense that the Walker administration knows how to negotiate anything. They're certainly not doing a very good job of negotiating with this mining company.
All right, we're going to take a break, and when we return, we're going to get into some political news and start talking about what happened on Super Tuesday and what's happening in the U.S. Senate race here in Wisconsin. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8:30, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is the Week in Review, and we're taking a look back at some of the top stories of the week. And joining us in the studio this week, David Blaska, former Dane County Supervisor, with a new blog, Bring It, on the In Business Wisconsin website. Ed Garvey is with us as well, Senior Partner at the law firm of Garvey, McNeil & Associates, and the publisher of FightingBob.com. We are talking with them about the top stories of the week and inviting your calls at 800-642-1234. Well, Super Tuesday was a big day, and I have to preface this by saying I did an interview with somebody back in January about the Republican primary, and one of my questions was, how soon is this going to be over? And all the predictions were January, it's going to be over. February, done. And I said, is Wisconsin going to matter? And he said, no. And so then I felt kind of bad. But here we are, Super Tuesday. It's come and gone. David Blaska, let's start with you. It was kind of good news for Mitt Romney, but it looks like we got a ways to go.
That's a strong statement when you're talking about Mitt Romney. well, you know, this is a circular firing squad. For a while, I was a little bit worried that, you know, these people would damage themselves like crazy. But I think after going through this trial by fire, I guess, and you know, I mean, I think we were in, Iraq. It was not as long as this Republican presidential primary has gone on. They ought to be pretty bulletproof when this is over with. Let's hope. I don't know. I'm a little worried. You know, on the other hand, I think back to 1980, and I'm old enough to remember that, Ed, is too. I mean, there were, you know, George Herbert Walker Bush, who we didn't call Herbert Walker then because he was George Bush. There was no other George Bush that we knew of. That's the year Reagan. Ed Crane was on. There are Jack Kemp. There's all a whole cast of people. And Ronald Reagan actually had fired, I think, Ed Sears, his campaign manager, because he did poorly in, I think, New Hampshire or whatever. So they had a real scrum going for a while, and yet it all turned out against a very, I think, very vulnerable opponent in Jimmy Carter. And I do think Barack Obama is a very vulnerable presidential candidate.
All right, Ed Garvey.
Well, this will be the first election where, after Citizens United, where the unlimited amount of corporate money can flow into these campaigns. And I think we're looking at an absolute disaster. The system is completely broken. They're going to put in $1 billion in the presidential race and probably another $1 billion in the congressional races. This is awful. That's why we've started what we call the Tin Cup Movement, to say to Democrats, if you run for office, you ought to say, we won't take any money from big business, from big labor, from anyone else. We're going to run on the principles. What I worry about as I look at the future of the Democratic and the Republican Party is that you can't even get good people to even think about running for office because the amount of money that it takes. And so what we end up with is, you look at those four people running for president on the Republican side, it's a disgrace. I mean, I can't believe that a major party in this country could come up with that four groups, but they have. I mean, listen to Romney or Rick Santorum, my goodness, or to some extent Ron Paul is the only one making any sense when it comes to foreign policy. But the rest of them have made no mark whatsoever that would compel people to go vote for them.
But shouldn't that make you happy?
I am happy.
Okay, David Plaster.
Yeah, you never I have to tell you when I'm happy. I am happy. Dave Obie.
It's a crabby kind of happy. Yeah, Dave Obie. Yeah.
I agree with you, but not for the wrong reason.
There's another guy that's not going to run, by the way. I was just, you know, added.
He might.
Well, I was going to ask you, just if I may, Gene, so who would you like to see run as a Republican candidate or be the Republican?
Oh, I'm happy with the four that they have I think Obama is reelected already.
Well, actually, the polls don't show that.
But the Irish do.
Okay. All right. I'm not sure.
Let me ask about Wisconsin. April 3rd is sneaking up on us. Is Wisconsin going to be a factor in all this?
Looks like, yeah, yeah. There's their mistaking going too early sometimes, and will this go to the convention, so-called broker convention? But I remember Ed does too. Watching conventions, and I attended one of them. They're pretty much dog and pony shows now, but 1960, I think there's still a little bit of, will Kennedy get it on the first ballot? It was interesting.
I think a broker convention would be fun. I mean, it may not help the party that is having the broker convention, but it was part of the Jerry Brown effort when he went to the convention. And, of course, those who were in control of the convention didn't want Jerry to speak, let alone participate. But to your question, will they still be relevant on April 3rd? I mm-hmm. don't know. I think it depends on whether one of them gets out. I mean, if Newt Gingrich drops out or Santorum drops out, or Ron Paul drops out, that will end it.
Yeah, I mean, that's another thing. I mean, there is pressure on some of these candidates to drop out. Ed Garvey, I imagine you'd like to see them all stay in and keep shooting at each other for the short term.
I provide the ammunition.
Okay,
but I believe in the Second Amendment.
Dave Blasko,
it wouldn't be concealed, would it? That's the problem.
What do you think? Should somebody step aside here?
Well, I don't know if let's say that Newt Gingrich steps aside. There is an anti-Romney vote out there. So if Gingrich steps aside, I think Santorum gets that. It amazes me that we're even talking about Rick Santorum at this point. I thought, he was his sell-by date had occurred because he lost that last his last Senate race. But stranger things have happened. Does another Bush? Does Jeb Bush get in? Does Mitt Romney strike a deal and maybe get a Paul Ryan, someone who would as his vice presidential candidate, somebody who would really excite the base, or the other guy that would excite me is Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey. If he could stand, and who's already endorsed Mitt Romney, by the way, and say, this guy's on my ticket, I think, boy, that'd be powerful.
I think the problem we have here is now with multimillionaires or billionaires, if they decide they want to adopt someone like Newt Gingrich, he stays in because he gets all the money that he wants from the gambling casinos out in Las Vegas. Or if the Romney super PAC puts in $1 billion or $200 million or $100 million, he can destroy his opposition, as he's done successfully in many of the states where there's been a close primary. So it used to be that the parties had something to say about who was going to run. Now they're totally eliminated, and what you have are the special interest groups that have their millionaires, the Koch brothers, in their back pocket, and so they can come up with anything they want. So it really will depend on whether the Koch brothers and the guy from Las Vegas decide that Newt Gingrich should stay in or not.
Well, Ed, you've been beating that drum for 30 years, and I give you credit for
40,
it.
40, actually.
Okay. Ever since Watergate, we've had round after round of quote-unquote, I'm putting these snotty little quotes around campaign finance reform. And it just gets worse and worse, according to Ed. I agree. Talk about the law of unintended consequences. Gene McCarthy ran a credible, incipient, insurgent kind of race against a sitting president thanks to one trust fund baby boomer who bankrolled him. Gene McCarthy didn't have to get on the phone and wheedle. He didn't have to have these, $100 plate dinners. He went out and broadcast his message thanks to the funding of a millionaire. Ed, you liberals have your millionaires. You represented the 1% as in the NFL. We've got our millionaires. The fact that they want to use that money for political speech instead of for, wine, women, and song, that's fine. That's fine with me.
Well, if some of your millionaires would play out their option, we'd like to make a bid for some of them.
Okay. We've got a side note from Tuesday. In Ohio, Dennis Kucinich lost a primary race there. He ran against another incumbent because of redistricting. In the same state, Joe the Plumber won an election there.
That's the same district.
Yeah. What to make all this? Well,
Marcy Kaptur is the winner there, and she's a longtime favorite, but I think probably Kucinich is better known to all of us except maybe for John Nichols.
She's very good. I mean, it's not like we've lost a great deal here. I mean, Dennis Kucinich will play a role. I did hear this morning that he may not endorse Marcy Kaptur, which I think would be a mistake. She's a very good person, a good progressive. I think she should be a big step forward in Congress. Dennis will always play a role. He is one of the most energetic, charismatic people on the scene today. So in office or out of office, he's going to play a role.
David Blaska, anything you'd like to add? Let's move on to Wisconsin. We have a new candidate in the Republican primary for the U.S. Senate seat that is opening up. Eric Hovde, hedge fund manager, made his announcement, I think, yesterday or the day before. And it's getting awfully crowded there on the Republican side of things. What's going to happen?
It's a herd instinct. There's blood in the water, I think. Anytime you have that many candidates, it's a good sign because it means that there's some good feeding going on, the feeding frenzy, I guess. That's what I'm trying to say. You only have Tammy Baldwin on the Democratic side, who I don't think translates well very far outside of Dane County. A great list of candidates. Tommy Thompson, who has been my guy from day one. But Mark Newman, who is a former congressman, Jeff Fitzgerald from the Assembly, the kind of the younger look there. There's a fellow by the name of Kip Smith, who is a physical therapist from Rhinelander. I'm sure that he'll capture all the physical therapists in Rhinelander in that campaign. But Hovde is a good name in the Madison area in business. Glenn Hovde is still around, regular guy that you'd ever meet. So it sounds like you'll have the money to run a credible campaign.
The amount of money we're talking about is so phenomenal. I mean, it's hard to describe. I mean, David's right. I've been harping on this for 3 or 4 decades. But the fact is that now it's worse than ever before. And so somebody like Hovde, if he thinks he's got a lot of money by putting in $2 or $3 million, that's just an ante for the poker game. So I think they're going to have some real problems. Tommy Thompson's in the best position because he's been working for the special interests in Washington ever since he left the governor's race, or left the cabinet under Bush. So I don't know. Perhaps I could help Hovde by endorsing him. David, what do you think?
You strike me as more of a Kip Smith kind of guy.
Anybody going to get into the race on the Democratic side against Tammy Baldwin, or is she going to be it?
Oh, I think Tammy is one of the most attractive candidates that we've had in years. I think she will do a great job. She's going to do very, very well outside of Dane County. The Republicans are fooling themselves if they think that it's only Dane County. She's very popular around the state. They like her. I think this is going to be the year of the woman, thanks to Rush Limbaugh and the Republicans. Women are going to be in a much better position to gain support because the gender gap is growing between the Republicans and certainly women.
Translation, Gene, Ed just said is, yeah, Tammy Baldwin is it.
Yeah, and she's going to win.
All right, yeah. There you go. We've heard it from all angles.
That's all
sure.
They got. That's all they got.
You want to bet $10,000 on that?
We'll do it on the radio. We've got some more of Wisconsin election news. We talked about it last hour. But voter ID suddenly is off the table, at least for the April 3rd primary. There's this injunction that's been issued by a Dane County judge. It's gotten some people angry anyway. Let's start with Ed Garvey on this. Your opinion on the injunction and where we go from here?
Well, the law is blatantly unconstitutional. I think Judge Flanagan did exactly the right thing to say that under the Wisconsin Constitution, it's wrong, it's unconstitutional, and should not stand. So I think that's good. It's a big step forward. The idea of this photo identification is a nationwide effort by the Republicans to suppress the vote. They want to suppress the vote by blacks, by older people, and by disabled, and so on and so forth. And so you see it introduced all over the country. And Flanagan took a major step forward, I think, to say it's not going to happen here in Wisconsin. And I don't think you're going to get that changed.
Well, that's mythology. That's some of your Democratic mythology. Wanted to suppress the vote. You know, what suppresses the vote is every time you have duplicate vote, every time you have illegal votes, felons vote, it takes away, it disenfranchises a legitimate voter. You know, I was struck by the fact that, first of all, it just amazes me that the state legislature, representing the entirety of the state of Wisconsin, 99 assemblymen, 33 senators, a governor, duly elected, all of their work has to pass the muster of one locally elected Dane County judge who, part of his ruling was that the photo voter ID was, quote-unquote, largely needless. That is not a judicial determination. Well, the legislature decides what is needed or what is not needed. The judge would say, is it legal? And we have a United States Supreme Court decision from 2008 written by Justice Stevens. On Indiana's identical law, photo ID, and it was a 6-3 vote to uphold that law. So I don't know, you know, this. And then, by the way, I think that Judge Flanagan's injunction will be overturned before April 3rd.
Well, the biggest problem we've had in the state of Wisconsin is Waukesha County. And one of our people has written to Jimmy Carter asking if he would come and observe Waukesha County the next time there's an election. It seems to me that Justice Prosser won that election. He lost in 71 out of the 72 counties, but he won in Waukesha County by enough votes to get him through. So, Dave, when you complain about one county, think about Justice Prosser.
Well, they decided to count the votes in Brookfield. excuse me.
Before we get to the break, one more piece of election news having to do, I guess, with future elections, to be accurate. But there was some legislation passed in the Assembly this week regarding future recall elections. In the future, the legislation calls for those to be limited to public officials charged with crimes or ethics violations. And right now, of course, public can recall folks, elected officials, for any reason. Dave Blaska, is this an idea you endorse?
Well, the polls right now show Scott Walker, I think, 52-47%, something, almost what he won by 2 years ago. So we're going to have a recall election that's going to be very close. Doesn't that tell you something that, in other words, it's not some heinous crime that the people want this guy out, but he's got a 4-year term and there's nothing you can do about it? I think what we ought to do is have the equivalent of an impeachment process, which Wisconsin does not have. Even with, Ed, you're a lawyer, you can figure this out. I can too. I can noodle my way around the proposed law change by having someone like Ed file charges against Scott Walker, and now he's been charged, and now let's recall him. So that's, I think that the right thing to do is get rid of recalls entirely, because we have these constant do-overs. We have Russ Feingold saying it's not over until our side wins. That's what we've got. Well, he said that in a rally in Madison here. So people are rightly and justly tired of this.
Well, the fact that it's only happened 3 times in history where a governor has been recalled gives you some idea it's not exactly a problem that you have to deal with every day. Walker so antagonized the people of the state that it developed into the uprising of the year last year. And I think when you take a look at it, what's wrong with the recall? I mean, it's the people deciding whether or not they want to recall a legislator, a Supreme Court justice, or a governor. It gives them something to say. So just because you elect somebody doesn't mean that you knew everything that you should have known before you elected them. And so there's plenty of opportunity. I mean, it's not a walk in the park. It's very difficult. Very few people are going to take a serious whack at recall. But leave it to the incumbents to say, well, let's make it more difficult, because once we're in, we want to stay in. So, don't talk to us about recall. Talk to us about making sure we can stay in power.
Let's take a break. When we return, we'll be talking about Rush Limbaugh, the National Football League, and, of course, it's the Week in Review quiz. That is just around the corner. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 12 minutes now before 9 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell in for Joy Cardine. We are talking about the news stories of the week with Ed Garvey and David Blaska this hour. But before we get back to the news, it is time for the Week in Review quiz for this week. And here it is. So everybody listen up. A new world champion of cheese was crowned this week in Madison. In the previous 3 world champion cheese contests, somebody from Switzerland took the title, but not this time. So here's the question. From which country is this year's winner from? All right. If you know the answer, or even if you don't, give us a call at 800-642-1234. Drop your answer off there. You can also provide it on email, talk@wpr.org. Our guests are writing down their answer to this question, and they will reveal whether they were correct as we get towards the end of the program. So which cheese, what country did that champion cheese come from? Ed Garvey and David Blaska are with us, and we are talking about some of the top news stories of the week. One which a lot of people have questioned or have talked about, certainly, is this whole issue with Rush Limbaugh and talking about the law student testifying on Capitol Hill. And Rush Limbaugh, generally speaking, I think likes attention. He certainly got an awful lot of it this week. David Blaska, what do you make of this? Is this an issue that should rise to the President of the United States?
Well, yeah, he did make a phone call, didn't he?
Yeah.
I don't know. To me, all of my cultural references, Ed and Gene, are at least 30 years old. But I'm thinking of Dan Aykroyd to Jane Curtin saying, "You ignorant slut," you know, and that was a takeoff on, I think, James Kilpatrick versus Jane Alexander the very first year of 60 Minutes. Now, this is that long ago. All of which is so, and he apologized for calling her a slut. Rush Limbaugh did.
Oh,
but what's all of this is a smokescreen for the fact that you've got a Democratic Party activist, and that's what this Sandra Fluke is, who chose to attend a Catholic law school, Georgetown University Law School, a private law school. She's paying $46,000 a year in tuition. But she can't pay and vastly overrated, overinflated cost. It really is about $90 a month in term for birth control pills. No, she wants the state to pay. She wants David Blaskin and Ed Garvey to pay for her non-procreative sex. That's what it comes down to, and it's part of the Obama entitlement society, where every need and want of a person must be paid for by the government.
I am so infuriated by Rush Limbaugh and by the reaction of the Republicans to this. I can't believe it. As a father of three girls and the uncle of several nieces, and having had a wife and a mother, the idea that Rush Limbaugh would call her a slut and a prostitute is so outrageous that I think that it's going to be, as people look back on this election, they will say it really turned the corner when Rush Limbaugh became the spokesperson for the Republican Party. The idea of calling someone these names is just incredible. And to distort it, to say it's just about saving some money, it's not. It's about women's health and what they need. A lot of birth control is used for prevention of other problems such as cancer. So for them to say, oh, this is really just all about somebody getting money so that because they're entitled, misses the point so completely that I think it would be a strange woman who would look at these sets of facts and say the Republican Party is going to be my champion.
Speaking of strange women, let's talk about Sandra Fluke a little bit. Ed, will you take a question? Does Sandra Fluke have cancer?
I don't have any idea. I've never met her, never talked to her.
Has she been diagnosed with cancer?
Does
she have a medical prescription for cancer?
I don't know. She is speaking for other women. She was testifying about what
these other women cannot. These other women cannot speak for themselves. These women that you refer to that have these problems, they can't speak. So she speaks for them. How wonderful. And that is by the way, what the Democratic Party has always done, they speak for people who cannot speak for themselves, and they put words in their mouth. The fact of the matter is, this is roiling, and I'm a cafeteria Catholic, and I think, Ed, you're nominally a Catholic, too, or better, I don't know. I don't mean to disparage your religion at all, because it's my religion, but I'll have to tell you I'm a cafeteria Catholic. But it bothers me that we have a federal government now that dictates, it's not like she can't get birth control pills from Planned Parenthood, from a lot of other sources, but she wants to bring the Catholic Church down to its knees. She wants them to heal so that she can force her worldview on the private sector, on a religion.
A citizen steps forward and say, "I'd like to testify on this because it affects all sorts of women."
She wants Georgetown University, a Catholic university, a private university that she chose to attend, to give her. She should go.
So it's her fault.
She should go where the birth control pills flow like wine.
Well, let me break in here and ask this: is this an issue that's got legs?
Or
is
this,
okay, let's start with that on this, and then we'll come back.
I could make a cheap joke on that.
No, let's not.
No, I won't.
Let's not do that.
No, let's not do that.
Ed Garvey, why don't you kick that? Is this an issue that's going to be around for a while?
Oh, it's going to stay around because the Republicans have completely decided that Rush Limbaugh can be their spokesperson. So when Mitt Romney was asked about it, he said, well, I would have used different words. Rick Santorum says, oh, this is just part of entertainment. Newt Gingrich, none of them are responding. And as Chris Matthews said, no, I think it was actually George Will, if they can't stand up to Rush Limbaugh, how do we expect them to stand up to Iran? I mean, the simple fact is that this is a disgrace to the Republican Party, and I think it's their undoing.
Well, it's already backfiring. And, Ed, you're forgetting here. Now, the problem with Rush Limbaugh is everyone listens to him. Ed Schultz from MSNBC called Laura Ingraham a slut.
And he apologized.
And so did Rush Limbaugh.
No, he did not.
Yes, he did apologize.
If you call that an apology, we're...
Well, I see you're not going to accept the apology. That's fine. And we had a local radio show host here, and he made in Madison, who called the Lieutenant Governor, Rebecca Clayfish, basically accused her of performing fellatio in order to get her position. So, and he apologized, too. So I don't know if it's a real apology or not. There was outrage, and they apologized. They shouldn't have said it in the first place. I think you're right. That I don't think the term slut is not one that I would ever use, and I think... Rush Limbaugh was wrong to use it, and I think he's apologized for it. But his point is essential, and I think as this thing plays out, Gene, this issue is already backfiring on the Democrats.
Oh,
and Barack Obama. Huge.
All right, I think we've pretty much taken that one as far as we can go.
Yeah, he's just wrong.
Let's move into the National Football League. We're going to start with Ed Garvey on this because, as we know, you've got some background there. This investigation into what they're calling the bounty scandal at the New Orleans Saints is making waves across the NFL. Ed Garvey, your reaction to this? I mean, is this going to change anything? Is this a real issue? What are we talking about here?
Well, the National Football League has a real problem. One of the problems is that they have not taken the concussion issues seriously. And now to find out that there's a coach who has a bounty on players saying if you hurt this player, whether he's a quarterback or wide receiver or whatever, you're going to get a bonus. It's an outrage. And I was happy to see that the union stepped forward and said they're going to investigate it and take some action. So I hope it stops immediately. I mean, I have no idea how many teams this is, you know, have done this, but it's certainly wrong.
I'll defer to Ed on this one. He does know his subject here.
Doesn't All right.
There's got to be one, right? I mean, I'm sorry.
I am not even going to go there.
Sorry.
All right. What else do we have to talk about this week? One more bit of state news here. If legislation has its way, the powers vested in the Secretary of State's office right now in Wisconsin could be even more reduced. Dave Blaska, let's start with you on this. This proposal to take away those powers from the Secretary of State, what do you think about that?
Well, I don't know. This is breaking news here, Gene. There are still some powers left. I guess I didn't know that, but that's news to me.
So you could live without the Secretary of State's office?
I think we have been.
Okay. Ed Garvey.
Well, they keep trying to take responsibilities away from the Secretary of State so they can get rid of the job. It seems to me they ought to just have an up or down vote on whether they're going to keep the job or not. I think it's good to have an elected Secretary of State. I think it's good to have an elected treasurer. I think more elections are better than fewer elections because I think it involves more people in the process. Our problem is not that we have too many good candidates. Our problem is that we have too many people who can't run for public office because they're not known and they don't have the millions of dollars that it takes to become known, and therefore they're out of the system.
All right. That was the last word on that. We're going to reveal now the answer to the Week in Review quiz, and we'll see how our guests in the studio do, too, because we'll put it to them. All right, here is the quiz question. To remind you, a new world champion of cheese was crowned this week in Madison. In the previous three world champion cheese contests, somebody from Switzerland took the title, but not this time. From which country is this year's winner from? Anybody in the studio want to take a shot at that?
I would say the Vatican.
The Vatican, okay.
Ireland.
Ireland. You're both wrong.
All right.
It is the Netherlands, and it was It was a Vermeer cheese. It was just crowned, I think, last night or the day before. It was a relatively big story. It's named Vermeer. One judge said it stood out for its smooth, clean flavor, as well as its nice body and mouthfeel. There were 2,500 entries, by the way. Five of the 16 finalists were from
Wisconsin.
Yeah. There you go. So maybe next year we'll be the world champion. That would be good news for it. Do you guys have a favorite kind of cheese?
Yeah, but blue cheese, Stilton especially, yeah.
Okay.
I still think cheddar is about as good.
Okay, there we go. Well, Stan from Orfordville knew the answer this week, and he is the winner of our Week in Review quiz question. So, Stan, thanks for the call, and thanks to everybody else who called as well. And I'd like to take a moment and thank Ed Garvey and David Blaska for being with us this morning. It's been fun.
Thank you, Gene. It has been fun.
It has.
All right, David Blaska, Ed Garvey with us to help sort out the stories in the Week in Review for this week here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like a copy of the program, you can always check out our online archives. They are available for you 24 hours a day at WPR.org. Rob Ferret produced this hour. We had on-air production from Bill Martins and Amanda Marcus. I'm Gene Purcell. I've been in for Joy Cardine. She should be back on Monday if everything works right. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.